We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News, Australia's official suppository of all wisdom. I am, of course, your host, Matt Harvey, and it is November, which of course means it is National Novel Writing Month, that event that happens the month after a horrid president or PM leaves office and all the people who knew things that should have been brought to the public light to stop their horrid reign decide it's time for people to know, as it will now be a profitable piece of history, then they need to float for a bit until people forget that they were involved with the horrible regime and are willing to give them a job again. And of course, who could forget, it is National Recycling Week this week, and as such we will be recycling a classic Bearer of Weird News joke to create something new, but as with most recycling, it is less effective this second time around. So here is your classic recycled joke. TikTok, the Chinese-owned video sharing app, has had internal documents leaked which informed moderators to suppress posts created by users deemed too ugly, poor, or disabled for the platform, effectively speeding up the process of regular TV, because the internet is nothing if not efficient at bringing out the worst in humans. These same documents show moderators were also told to censor political speech in TikTok live streams, punishing those who harmed national honour or broadcast streams about state organs such as police, with bans from the platform. To be fair though, if Chinese dissidents want their political messages spread to a wide audience by someone with a broad appeal, there are plenty of out-of-work white actors at the moment who will be collecting payment via Cameo. As the world's economy falls apart and we find out simultaneously how little we need the performing arts and how desperately we need the performing arts. With people going so far as taking the desperate measure of talking to their neighbours in order for some semblance of human contact. There it is. There is your classic recycled Bearer of Weird News joke. I hope you have enjoyed the recycling and that we get the appropriate amount of respect from the recycling community that we deserve. Moving on now, however, we've got a couple of live dates coming up that you should know about. If you enjoy the podcast, if you want to come out to see one of those shows, I do maintain this is the best way to support the show, because this sort of financial freedom allows me to really focus on putting out regular episodes. I will be bringing my storytelling and stand-up show, Wage Against the Machine, to the Wellington Fringe and to the Newcastle Fringe. At the moment, those two dates are locked in. I will be at Teowera. What's the dates? I think it's 2nd of March until maybe the 11th of March. But do check the Wellington Fringe website, and I'll be at the Newcastle Comedy Club for a couple of shows there. I think it's the 16th to the 19th. But do check the websites. I will, maybe if I remember to, put a little detail down the bottom here clarifying whether or not I was wrong. It's things that I should write down before doing these intros. But I will, of course, be looking to do more festivals. I've approached a couple of festivals about the possibility of bringing the show to them. So if you have a local fringe or comedy festival and you think that you'd like to check out the show, hit me up. I'm always looking for new festivals, and I'm more than happy to get in touch with them about the possibility of bringing the show over. But until then, I will, of course, be the Bearer of Weird News. So let's start with the headlines. Going forward, it's going to look like Australian companies will face fines of $50 million for data breaches. Fortunately, by then, they'll have made at least $100 million from selling your data for ad optimization, optimizing it to such a fine point that you'll actually know your data has been stolen after you receive a targeted ad for a VPN and a fire sale on your own identity, because it's basically worthless at this point. Astronomers recently discovered the least dense gas giant ever recorded, orbiting a red dwarf star, a Jupiter-sized planet which is unusually fluffy and akin to a marshmallow. Guys, we did it! We finally did it! The search is over! We discovered Planet B. Yes, I know that we're out there saying there is no Planet B, but here it is. The climate crisis just got delicious. Come on, guys. Maybe if we get excited enough about this, then we can convince people like Elon Musk that they need to get there first, and then we can close Earth behind them. If not, we will still be able to send all the peeps there. So nobody needs to eat one ever again. All the marshmallows in one place. When assessing whether or not the planet would be suitable for sustaining life, it was rated 1 star. The Albanese government will bank $10 billion in savings from phase one of its much-telegraphed rorts and waste audit. Which sounds like a great investment, if I'm honest. We should have done one of those earlier. Maybe now we'll have enough money to lift up JobKeeper? What's that? No? No, we won't? Oh, no, never mind. Never mind. I'll just keep going hungry then. Please come support the show. A new study suggests that pornography use does not predict problems in erectile functioning or sexual satisfaction. Study was published in the prestigious Get Out, It's for Research magazine. You can get editions with pictures, or for a discount, you can get ones with just the articles. The ACT has decriminalized small amounts of 8 commonly used illicit drugs, becoming the first jurisdiction to do so in the country. To be fair though, with this cost of living crisis, it's the only state that can actually afford any of them. The 8 on the list are amphetamine, cocaine, meth, MDMA, heroin, cannabis, psilocybin, and LSD. This all comes on the back of the most potent drug there is, increasingly larger hits of power and corruption, becoming decriminalized in the ACT. Fake $100 bills, which were used for a film and TV production, were stolen from an Alice Springs address. Northern Territory Police say the $100 bills feature a series of subtle differences to authentic cash, including pictures of Alf from Home and Away and the crocodile hunter Steve Irwin. Upon discovering the notes were missing, local police warned locals if they see one of the notes to remember, that's not a $100 note, this is a $100 note, misquoting Crocodile Dundee instead of quoting the crocodile hunter. And that's just one of the reasons that we hate cops trying to make jokes. Stick to what you're good at, arresting minorities and beating the wives. Dana White, the president of the UFC, has given the green light for a new venture, the Power Slap League. So far, the working titles for weight divisions are Feather Concussion, Light Concussion, Middle Concussion, Heavy Concussion, and maybe you should have just played NFL instead. A Saskatchewan woman has been exempted from union membership in her workplace because she argued her Jehovah's Witness beliefs prohibit her from joining a political organization. She claimed that she is to have only one loyalty, and it is to the kingdom of God. Her fellow workers have started avoiding her and calling her the snitch, but are enjoying her new reckless attitude and lack of willingness to adhere to any sort of higher power that isn't God. They've really been enjoying her stealing work supply spree, and they've even started taking bets on how long it'll be before she gets fired. Iran has promised to provide Russia with surface-to-surface missiles, in addition to more drones. Upon hearing Iran was helping Russia, the United States were furious. A White House spokesperson said, "Selling weapons to questionable regimes is our racket." Starbucks was sued by 8 employees at a South Carolina store who said the company falsely accused them of criminal conduct as they demanded a raise from their manager after the store's employees had voted 18-0 to unionize in June. The manager urged police to charge them with assault and kidnapping after the workers pressed her for a raise in August. Look, in the manager's defense, they aren't used to having their wallets pried open and seeing dollars just flow out of them. If my money started vanishing against my will, I'd also assume a crime had taken place. A day after an Amazon driver was found dead on a customer's front lawn in Missouri after being attacked by dogs, some Amazon delivery drivers say they received the following message from the company, which lightheartedly refers to dogs as our four-legged customers and Fido, with statements like, if we know Fido is nearby, we'll let a paw print to give you a heads up. In the same vein, Amazon has also started referring to injuries as workplace oopsies, deaths as retirement shifts, adding some pretty cute emojis to the messages. Like, after years of workplace oopsies, Jerry had his retirement shift today. Party horn, face with the birthday party hat emoji. The Australian Monarchist League has told its supporters, don't criticise us, after backlash over the appearance of One Nation's Pauline Hanson and former Liberal candidate Catherine Deeves at its annual conference. Members were reminded that the two speakers were symbolically perfect as they are supporting the monarchy, and Pauline Hanson is all about not integrating non-white people, while Catherine Deeves is completely against changing to better represent oneself. Speaking of monarchy, 14 recently elected Quebec politicians refused to recite an oath of allegiance to King Charles III during their swearing-in to the provincial legislature. While the motion to drop the monarchy failed, the king best be careful. They might be Canadian, but we all remember what happened the last time the French weren't happy with a monarchy. Peter Dutton used his federal budget reply speech to attack the government's missed opportunity to help Australians in need. If only there had been a party with, say, a 9-year unbroken streak of leadership with which they could have helped the country. But alas, we have not seen such a party as that. And that's the headlines for today. Let's go on to the bigger stories. First up, it is local election news. Victoria, Sky News' nightmare socialist dystopian fever dream. A horror so horrific, it is two types of a bad dream. With the premiership of one Dan Andrews, militant dictator of the United Socialist Suburbs of Victoria, up for election, a surprisingly democratic move from the media-established dictator, time for the people to step up and have their voices heard. Victoria was home of the longest lockdown in the world during the height of the COVID pandemic, a moment in time so far behind us that it seems silly that people were even upset about getting a vaccine. I'm glad we all came together as a people and took our civic responsibilities seriously without any outrage or tantrums. That would have been embarrassing. Here is footage of us, Victorians, getting together to celebrate the responsible actions of the community.
I brought a set of gallows into Parliament House to remind the traitors what happens when you commit treason in Australia.
Real old school party vibes there. They're out partying like it's 1799. Which really means that anyone opposing Dan Andrews should have their work cut out for them. Shouldn't need to even campaign this year. Can just float right into office like the federal Labor on their, hey, we aren't those guys platform. So let's look in. How is the Commandant faring this election? Well, what do we have here? Well, The Age says, while Labor's primary vote is down 4 points to 38%, and is sitting 5 points lower than it was for the 2018 election when it won 55 out of 88 seats. And the coalition has picked up some of Labour's losses. While 31% of voters claim they are intending to support the Greens, minor parties, or independent candidates in this month's election, we all know that political surveys are a lot like Facebook event invites. We know what we should say, and we will click attending, but when the day of the protest rolls around, we'll let our kids go, and we'll tell them that we're a bit tired to go today, and you know, we believe in the cause and we believe in what they're doing and get out there and represent, you know? But we're just a bit tired, you know? Whereas the age says preferences, the secret underbelly of the political system where, sure, you can tell people you voted for the Greens, but you know deep down that you second preference Labour, just in case. Because, honestly, as you walk out of the polls, who's asking for your preferences? Nah, they're gonna be like, who'd you vote for? They're not going to be like, who's your preference? Who's your preference? Those preferences are flowing strongly back to Labour, who voters say have made mistakes, but have strong leadership. Naysayers will hear that take, and will nay, as is their cultural right. But here, we see CFMEU posters plastered around Melbourne that read, Dan might be a prick, but he's a prick who's delivering for construction workers. This is the same CFMEU whose headquarters were exposed to some enhanced interrogation activities during lockdown. So it'll take some real proper election promises to overthrow the incumbent dictator. What has the Liberal Party decided they'll do to win the hearts and minds of the good people of the United Suburbs? Well, let's have a little look-see here. First of all, New South Wales Liberal Treasurer and former Environment Minister Matt Keane joined the Victorian Liberals' Deputy Leader David Southwick and the Brighton MP James Newbury to compare electric vehicle policies. Newbury said he consulted Keane last year before the Victorian Coalition announced the plan to legislate an emissions reduction target of 50% by 2030 and reach net zero by 2050. Which bears a resemblance to New South Wales' plan. And maybe it did happen, but if it did happen, it happened in a different state. You probably wouldn't have heard about them anyway. You certainly wouldn't have met or seen them or had any news reporting about it. So you don't need to ask any more questions about it, but it definitely happened, yep. So don't even worry about it. Don't even think about it. The Victorian Coalition announced that if elected in November, they will pause the state's questionable electric vehicle tax, which is currently the subject of a high court challenge, and spend $50 million to boost the uptake of low-emissions cars. Or, as Sky News is desperately trying not to report it as, woke madness gone wrong! The destruction of the Alpha political party into a blubbering mass of malleable goop waiting to be shaped by an electorate rather than telling an electorate how to be shaped. The anti-News Corp Lone Stone, standing vigilant on a mountaintop against the winds of change that a politician in need can hide behind for protection and to fix their hair before a news interview. But shelter comes at a cost, a rigidity of ideology and inability to flow with the march of progress. Not like the coalitions of the 2018 Victorian election, which Environment Victoria described as environmentally reckless and accused the opposition leader, Matthew Guy, of ignoring climate change. Keane and Newbury face resistance from some MPs in their own party over the policy, as well as their more progressive positions to support the Labor government's bill to set up an independent treaty authority and unequivocally rule out amending laws banning gay conversion therapy. But Keane, who is considered a leading moderate voice within the party, said it was imperative Liberals modernise and reflected the concerns of Australians. These values include conserving the environment, affording equal economic opportunities to all Australians, regardless of their gender or who they choose to love or who they choose to worship, and helping young people enter the property market. Which sounds like maybe he has been mixing with a different type of gangster this election. Progressive bikers from the Greens must have been sent around to intimidate and bully the coalition leader into a more progressive stance. After all, Victoria is Greens turf. And if you want to hang out on Greens turf, you better be prepared to pay a tribute and act accordingly. They'll be rebranding, with all of the posters for the party rebranded from the standard coalition blue to the new coalition green. Part of its new progressive coalition green campaign. Matthew Guy said that if the coalition was elected, it would run a 2-year pilot program to provide healthier lunches for prep to year 12 students and guarantee the program would be extended from selected state primary schools to all Victorian state schools by 2026. There has been some issues with the proposal with Southern Cross University education professor Pasi Salzberg saying providing universal lunches in all state schools would, at a conservative estimate, put healthier lunches at $5 per student per day. If each of Victoria's 650,000 public school students opted into the program, it would cost under $600 million. And an incomplete study he worked on at the University of New South Wales estimated the cost of healthy lunches in Australia could be as much as $8 per student per day. And this would bring the annual cost of the coalition's plan closer to $1 billion. Now, to be fair, the feeding and supporting of the poor is a new idea for Coalition Green. So the maths is going to be a little bit off. If you ask the Bearer of Weird News team to budget and fund a full prep to 12 lunch program, the numbers would be way off. It's not what we specialise in. We mostly do bullshit and avoiding the responsibility of real work. And after all, the Freudenberg $60 billion overshoot for JobKeeper making national news is really all the proof you need that the coalition doesn't know how to budget slash handle money slash support the poor. Guy, however, is still struggling to meet the needs of Coalition Green as he attempts to keep spinning plates going. And more than a few of these spinning plates were set up by the past of the party before he took over as leader in 2021. Plates that were left spinning by...
Just let me check my notes down.
Yes, opposition leader Matthew Guy, aka the nefarious GUI, when he ran the party from 2014 to 2018. But the days of such disdain for the poor are over, as the new coalition, who is looking to improve your life with cheap trains. Yeah, that's right. $2 all-day trains. Well, that's bound to get some votes. What could go wrong? Surely, this is nothing but a boon to the people all over the state, regardless of their standing in life. After all, if you only get one train per hour at your station, why should you pay more than $2 for it? You wouldn't pay more than $2 to sit in a piss-soaked toilet all day. Why should a piss-soaked train be any different? Look, maybe we should check with the experts first before signing away our state to the whims of a progressive madman like Matthew Guy. What do planning and transport experts warn? Let's have a little look. See, I've got somewhere... Just a moment, let me just... Again, I'll just check my notes down. Here we go. The new opposition policy to set $2 a day public transport pricing would disproportionately benefit the affluent and starve the government of funds needed to improve services in the outer suburbs. What a big whoopsie do. Reducing public transport effectiveness in areas where people need it the most. Remote areas with a high vampire score. Now, the vampire score, or the vulnerability analysis for mortgage, petroleum, and inflation risks and expenditure score, is a chart that measures vulnerability across the state. And like a hamlet in a novella, the more remote you are, the more likely you are to have a high vampire number. Turns out, groups would benefit more from an expansion of the public transport network with services that are more frequent, fast, and well-connected. Strange concept for those of us frequent PT users who have a real love-hate relationship with arrival times, in that we love to hate them. And if we can't point to the Japanese train system as the most superior system in the world, we have to address the range of smells and poor behaviours being exhibited within the train currently. And quite frankly, that is a reality we are not ready to address. A $2 fare policy would make more frequent and effective transport systems difficult, because revenue raised by ticketing would be slashed by 80%. Maybe Go Woke Go Broke really does exist. I'm quite surprised by this. We should note, in Victoria, ticket fares make up about 30% of the network's revenue, the remainder being raised by having a gang of plunderers run up and down the train lines looking for the vulnerable and the confused, and fining them for being too poor to afford a car or not having a job where they can work from home. After all, the poor have to pay the poor tax, that's the law, which would inevitably lead to more ticket inspectors being overpaid to justify their exorbitant pays by taking money from you, the scum who ride the trains. But at least Coalition Green is trying, right? Right? They want to help you. They just don't know how. It's not like he's out there pledging to bring back a law that allows religious schools to discriminate against LGBTQIA+ staff if elected, or, pre-selecting Moira Deming, a candidate who was considered too extreme for Scott Morrison's cabinet, which, let's not forget, included Catherine Deaves. Moira Deming, a candidate whose appointment has been met with criticism within the Liberal Party themselves, largely due to her conservative views on abortion and transgender rights, and her criticism of Victorian government safe schools program. Because those things were set in the past. The way, way distant past of... let me just check my notes. Of 2020! Woo! And while I'm tempted to deliver people a clean slate of things that they said in 2020 as a blanket societal rule, we can't. Some of them dug too deep and too greedily and unleashed the shadow and the flame of their mums, their minions, and super posting group. And it's not like Matthew Guy would, pre-select a skeptic of ambitious climate targets, and genuinely a person that I went to university with and should not be in a position of authority, Evan Mulholland, formerly of, and will likely go straight back to, the right-leaning Institute of Public Affairs, who is, as I've said, a staunch critic of climate targets and efforts to boost renewable energy. He wouldn't do that. This is Coalition Green. And even if you find a statement from the 2014 to 2018 Matthew Guy saying the opposite of anything he says now, those statements were in the past. And I think you'll find the past doesn't exist anymore, except as a loose construct of an idea. And are you going to let a loose construct of an idea control you? No! This isn't like money, or race, or gender, or countries. All those things provide Matt with power, and they definitely exist. Matthew Guy has come forward as the country's first presentism candidate, denouncing the past and the future as shared societal delusions, and reminding his opponents they need to respect his belief system, as it is illegal to persecute him based on his beliefs. When asked for comments about the past, a spokesperson for Matthew Guy's office said, "Are you going to let the past cancel you? The past is a persistent societal delusion which insists that we bow down to it through tradition and simultaneously the oppressive need to be better than our past selves. When events in the past and the future do not exist, the only reality, the only thing that is real, is the present." Matthew Guy is our first presentism candidate, and as such he has no past with which to be cancelled by, and no future to answer to. The only thing that matters is what he is doing now, in the present. If, in the future, which doesn't exist, he does something different to the equally non-existent past, it won't be a contradiction, as the past didn't happen, because the past doesn't exist. Moving on now to nuclear news. Surprisingly, our nuclear news is not taking place in Russia or the Ukraine, despite senior Russian military leaders discussing last month how and when they might use nuclear weapons on the battlefield in Ukraine. Nearly. Nope. We will learn all about that when the nuclear dust settles towards the end of World War III. No. Instead, we're going to turn our focus back home, as Australia has dropped its opposition to the treaty banning nuclear weapons in a vote at the United Nations. Now, don't get too excited, as Australia has yet to actually join the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons. No. We don't do that. Not yet. We've simply shifted our voting position from 5 years of no to abstain, continuing the long-standing tradition of Australia getting credit for moving from actively doing nothing to passively considering maybe doing nothing. A stance that we've held on such large-scale issues as animal preservation, giving refugees human rights, and the jewel in our nothing crown, climate change. Thank you. You're welcome. Foreign Affairs Minister Penny Wong said through a spokesperson that Australia had a long and proud commitment to the global non-proliferation and disarmament regime, and that government supported the new treaty's ambition of a world without nuclear weapons, despite at various points having uranium export agreements with all of the declared nuclear weapon states. For listeners, that's the US, the UK, China, France, and Russia, as late as 2011. Meaning the very nukes that are being threatened to be used on Ukraine may be using uranium mined right here in Australia. We can send them some of the stickers that proudly proclaim their bombs were made with parts imported from Australia. And when the big war comes and both sides send their nukes, we can look above us and proudly proclaim that was us. We are involved. And we'll get the astronauts in the ISS to lay down our custom destroyed by parts proudly from Australia sticker across the surface of the Earth after they are able to return. The previous coalition government was firmly against the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons, the international agreement that imposes a blanket ban on developing, testing, stockpiling, using, or threatening to use nuclear weapons, or helping other countries to carry out such activities. To be fair, we, as a country, had made our choice. The world was looking to benefit from a fire sale, and we have an abundance of fire to sell. Fortunately, we had failed to follow up on climate change action, so we've actually stockpiled an abundance of spare fire to sell when the time came. Actually, pretty clever if you think about it. Australia previously argued the treaty would not work because none of the nuclear weapon states had joined it, and because it ignores the realities of the global security environment. Those realities being that we will not stop selling uranium to countries like the US, whose use of nukes to intimidate other countries, who then felt they needed to have their own nukes, even blaming our US alliance obligations, with Australia relying on American nuclear forces to deter any nuclear attack on Australia. Like, for example, if, the US were trying to intimidate some sort of Pacific power, like, just as a random example, China. They probably deploy up to six nuclear-capable B-52 bombers to northern Australia. Pretty sensible move, given this is where all of the uranium is anyway. They are simply cutting down on the carbon footprint of their nuclear-capable B-52 bombers by not requiring the source of their power to need to be shipped to America, only to be flown back to Australia. The bombers would, hypothetically, serve as part of a much larger upgrade of defence assets across northern Australia, including a major expansion of the Pine Gap intelligence base, leading to the US committing to spending more than $1 billion upgrading its military assets across the top end. Essentially giving the Tyndall Air Base true blue Australian expansions like a parking area, forecast to cost up to $100 million, and that won't be finished until late 2026, demonstrating the creeping cultural influence of Australia's military might on our little brother America. See, they too can also fail to slowly build a car park. It's amazing. Though plans to build jet fuel storage tanks and an ammunition bunker at the site could be complicated due to Australia's tough rules on gun control. While Australia does have a proud history of the rules not applying to the powerful among us, we could avoid accusations of hypocrisy by pointing out the logical point that we don't have any strict rules on ammo control, it's merely the guns. Moving on now to betting news. It's been hard recently not to notice the influx of sports betting ads from groups of friends with codependency issues trying to convince you that you don't have a gambling problem as long as you can convince a friend to gamble with you, to a very inconsiderate homeowner smashing through multiple roofs and floors. While the ads have annoyed people so much that there have been demands for action, and Anthony Albanese is taking this as his moment to step up and obey the will of the people. Gambling companies will soon be forced to include new warnings on all of their advertisements about the risks of thinking that you can defeat a system designed for psychological warfare, with the end game being to separate you from the small amount of money you get paid from the job that you hate by giving you a sentence or two to contemplate that maybe you don't have the strength of will to outwit a multi-billion dollar scam designed to destroy you without mercy. Because you got a system, baby! New rules have been sent that will come into effect from April next year, which require advertising to include a caution about gambling and information about how to seek help, replacing the current gamble responsibly warning that appears at the end of advertisements for around 2 seconds. Now, it is unfair of me to imply that the phrase gamble responsibly is a useless piece of corporate condescension, disguised as corporate responsibility, where the key phrase still tells you to do the thing, you know, like drink responsibly, still encourages you to drink. The phrase means nothing. They may as well say, destroy yourself and your loved ones' lives responsibly. I mean, don't not do it, just be responsible. The thing that we refuse to be. 7 new options have been developed that Social Services Minister Amanda Rishworth says have been chosen after extensive research. I mean, not enough research to see that these kinds of warnings don't work, but enough to workshop some options. It's with our options. Among the taglines are, chances are you're about to lose, imagine what you could be buying instead, you win some, you lose more, what's gambling really costing you, think, is this a bet you really want to place? All of which, honestly, sound like they will be followed by the gambler screaming, oh yeah, you want a bet? To the TV afterwards, before doubling down the bet just to prove the ad wrong. Now, the federal government has provided extensive details about how the taglines must be included in advertisements. Companies have also been told they need to rotate through the taglines over 12 months to try to mitigate message fatigue. Companies have been told that the words for TV and radio must be read slowly, calmly, and at an even pace, putting an end to the career of the fast-reading voiceover guy from political campaigns. Just another everyday Australian suffering under the tyranny of Labor. I guess it really isn't easy under Albanese, If only we had listened. The warning texts must also take up a majority of the screen for video and digital advertising, whilst the guidelines also suggest using Arial font and the text to be in bold. Arial font. Arial font? The soup of fonts? Arial font is so bland. Robert Nicholas, a man whose life revolves around fonts and has professionally, since he was a teenager, and you need not know anything else about him, said it was designed as a generic sans serif, almost as bland as sans serif. You need an aggressive font that's going to infuriate some people. You need Comic Sans, the internet comments section of a font. Those advertisements must also include advice how to seek support through gambling out online. But honestly, the only way to balance this advertising would be to have a picture-in-picture advertisement that plays the gambling ad, but also has a person in the other box, on the other side, sort of like a devil and angel on your shoulder. The other box just yells at you the entire time, "Hey! Hey you! You aren't gonna win! This is a scam! Look, you don't set up a business that centers around money with the intention of giving it away, okay? No, that doesn't happen. Not even philanthropy does that, and that is a thing that is designed literally to give money away. Well, and tax deductions and reputation laundering. And look, I'm being bogged down. This stuff is bad. Don't do it. Don't do it. Just the entire time that the ad plays. However, the advertising new rules stop short of major changes and ignore the ongoing calls for tighter regulation of gambling advertising or banning promotions altogether. So we'll refer to it as the Labour Party of gambling ad reform. Well-intentioned, but ineffective. Moving on now to sports news. Sports! I don't really have enough general knowledge about this to make a light-hearted opening joke for this segment. Sports! Australia has become the first World Cup final side to release a collective statement from players criticising host country Qatar's human rights record. That story again. Country with terrible human rights record and history of sports washing, angry at Qatar for stealing their shtick. Some 16 players, including ex-Arsenal and Brighton goalkeeper Matt Ryan, appear in a video in which they draw issue with the country's treatment of migrant workers and the LGBTQIA+ community. And if there is one country that knows about treating migrant workers poorly, it is Australia, who has two thumbs and treats immigrants poorly. These guys, forcing migrant workers to pick fruit in order to renew their visa, with long days in the heat, making them pay for terrible living conditions while paying them as little as $2 per hour to do it. And the standard play is to yell loudly and blame your opponents for things that you are doing yourself, eh? Right? Worked for Donald Trump, and nothing has gone poorly for him since he finished being president, so why not give it a try? And frustratingly, I almost had to agree with Piers Morgan on this one when I saw that he had accused the Socceroos of hypocrisy over their World Cup protest. Fortunately, in true Piers Morgan fashion, the Icarus of making a good point, he flew too close to making a good point, and instead of landing on our horrible human rights record, he just flew right over that, probably because it was put in place by the coalition who are friends with the Murdoch Empire, who gave Pierce a job on Sky News, giving him a Murdoch number of 2, almost the smallest there is. For the uninitiated, one's Murdoch number is the smallest number of connections one has back to the Murdoch Empire, sort of like a dystopian version of your bacon number. His concern was that they are still playing, despite complaining. But when Meghan and Harry weren't happy and decided not to play anymore, you complained about it for nearly 2 years now. You gotta make up your mind, champ. Now, obviously, I would be remiss not to point out that Qatar has been worse than us as a whole. And recently, conditions have improved for workers in Qatar, particularly through the partial dismantling of the kafala system, which allowed employers to take workers' passports and block them from leaving the country. Something we've never actually done. And it is those small victories that allow us to maintain our moral superiority. Take that, Qatar. And while we're kicking the rich and powerful, let's continue doing that as often as possible. Over to Netball, where Netball Australia has been making headlines after Gina Rinehart's mining company, Hancock Prospecting, pulled out of a $15 million sponsorship deal because players on the Diamonds netball team took a stance against the sponsorship after Indigenous player Donnell Wallum requested an exemption from wearing the logo due to comments made in 1984 by Rinehart's father, Lang Hancock, where he suggested a plan to kill off troublesome Indigenous people through sterilisation, saying he'd...
Those that have been assimilated into, you know, earning good living or earning wages amongst the civilised areas that have been accepted into society, and they have accepted society and can handle society, I'd leave them well alone. The ones that are no good to themselves and can't accept things, the half-caste, and this is where most of the trouble comes, I would dope the water up so that they were sterile and would breed themselves out in future, and that would solve the problem.
Yikes. Let's just take a moment to let that wash over us. These are the people that we basically let run the country. Okay, enough of that. Woo! Just look, check it out. Come on, check it out. Move it on. All right. Weird that the billionaire daughter of a mining magnate who thinks rich people should be able to pay a fine to avoid jail and whose father bankrolled an unsuccessful secessionist party in the 1970s has trouble connecting with the downtrodden. I can't understand that at all. I suppose she just isn't used to diamonds giving her a hard time. Besides, none of the other sports washing that she's done has proven to be an issue for her. After all, she does sponsor Swimming WA, Swimming Queensland, Volleyball Australia, Rowing Australia, and Artistic Swimming Australia, and recently struck a deal with the Australian Olympic team until 2026. To be fair, Artistic Swimming Australia, I don't know, they kind of need to take any deal that they can get, right? Who else is going to support them? That is, unless they all turn out to be muscular, peak of fitness, hard-bodied snowflakes who need to spend less time exercising with their minds and opinions and more time building a bigger wallet for all the cash donations that they're going to get by having no scruples. Rinehart has never publicly addressed or distanced herself from those comments. And her dad has been dead for ages. Gina, he is not going to know about it. It's not going to... You could say it, it's fine. He was wrong. A lot of us have to come to terms with the things that our parents said, okay? It's a thing that with time it comes, like we grow up, we realize that our parents have some opinions that we don't really agree with. And you just sort of, negotiate that a little bit with yourself and with your relationship with them. And given that your guy's dead, given that he's dead, it's okay. You can just be like, he was wrong. It's fine. It's almost as if he was a clause in his will. You know, some people have to spend a night in a haunted house, others stand by family racism. You know, whatever your family decides. And she has stood by those statements like they are the house words of the Rinehart clan. We mine, and we racially discriminate. Despite the fact that, ultimately, Wallum found the pressure too much and decided that she would wear the logo. So there was no need for her to pull out anyway. But someone had stood up to the billionaire, and she'd had a fight, flight, or freeze response and decided to freeze by freezing all of the support for the Diamonds. Fortunately for the Diamonds, Netball Australia has signed a $15 million sponsorship deal with Visit Victoria days after Hancock Prospecting threw its public tantrum. Now, under the deal, which will run until June 2027, the Diamonds will adopt Victorian branding for home and away games, and players and coaches will front tourism campaigns. It won't surprise listeners of this podcast that immediately the Herald Sun writer and host of the imaginatively named The Friday Show on Sky News and Murdoch stan Rita Panahi jumped straight to her opinion column to deliver a piece that would have read as a little on the nose if you'd seen it as a satirical piece of the shovel. She said the Diamonds must reject the Visit Victoria money unless they are supportive of everything that Dictator Dan did to Victoria. And look, She makes a fair point. I am not sure if the Diamonds are ready to sign on with the idea of supporting a series of difficult measures put in place to keep as many people safe as possible in an increasingly complicated and evolving situation. Oh, actually, no, I've got it. I know what she is against. See, Rita is a diehard for murder, and seeing a group of people stand up for any kind of ideal, principle, or anything aside from bending my opinion to the nearest dollar dispenser. So she is genuinely shocked that they would care where their money comes from in any capacity. Makes sense. Makes sense. When someone has so little scruples, they'll take money from anybody. Gina and Hancock released two separate statements. The first announcing the withdrawal of the $15 million sponsorship, and the second addressing athlete activism, which said, Hancock and its executive chairman, Ms. Reinhart, consider that this is unnecessary for sports organizations to be used as the vehicle for social or political causes. Going on to clarify that using athletes for social and political causes was more of an act for businesses to undertake, and they are fundamentally misunderstanding the relationship. See, the relationship is more of a distraction more than anything else. The athletes sing and dance in a uniform that bears the business logo, jingling a metaphorical set of keys, saying, look over here, look over here. I said, fucking look over here. Why aren't you looking? Stop going over there. Stop. No, there's nothing over there to see. There's nothing over there. It's some skeletons that we forgot to give them a branded logo shirt. So fucking look over here. If they want someone who is willing to shill for them without compromising the sport, they're going to have to start sponsoring ex-athletes. See, ex-athletes speak to the hearts of the people who saw them race and will likely hold the same opinions as them. So when Dawn Fraser raised concerns that Gina Reinhart may pull out of the sports sponsorship, saying Reinhart, who also sponsors the Australian swimming and rowing team, so realistically Fraser has no vested interest in supporting Reinhart at all, said she was a good-hearted person and a hard businesswoman, going on to say if she needed someone to say something racist or transphobic, then Dawn was her girl, and would happily take the bullet for Reinhart, for a price, of course, but not so much as you'd expect. She's a pro after all. She does it mostly for the love of the game. And that is the end of the episode. Thanks so much for sticking around and listening and hanging out with me today. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you do, please do all the things, whatever platform you're on, be it likes or hearts or sharing it. Send it to someone who you think might enjoy it. Give it a nice review. Remember, the system is 5 stars if you liked it, 1 star if you didn't, all or nothing. I don't see the point otherwise. And please share it around. Send it to people who you think would get something out of this. And if you want to support, as always, please come out to live shows. We do have a link for donations on my link tree, but I do still think that the best way to support the show is come out to my live shows, and that is Wage Against the Machine, my storytelling and my storytelling and stand-up show, there it is, which will be in a festival near you sometime in 2023. Thanks so much, guys. Look after yourselves. And I will see you in the next episode. Goodbye.